it takes a leader to be confident in their own abilities. And it takes a leader to determine what is your purpose, right? Because to me, that's the difference between a manager and a leader.
This is Taking the Lead, a podcast for B2B tech professionals, leaders, and executives who want to learn from female icons in the tech industry. In each episode, host Christina Brady interviews women who are driving revenue for some of the most respected tech companies in the world. Are you ready to get inspired?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Taking the Lead. I am Christina Brady. I am your host. And before we jump into our incredible episode today, I would love to kick it off by thanking our incredible partner, Women in Sales. If you have not heard of this wonderful organization, they are focused on elevating, empowering, and promoting women within the sales profession. And they recognize that in order to realize this vision and create more equitable sales teams in the future, everyone has to be a part of that conversation. That is a gender agnostic conversation, and everybody can contribute toward the progress if your heart so telleth you. Through facilitating conversations and sharing resources focused on enabling sales professionals, they believe that we can help mold the future of sales to be more inclusive. And that is a world that I know I want to live in. If you want to get involved, head over to www.women-in-sales.com and join the conversation on Slack. And that brings me to our incredible guest, long time coming, Miss Jenny Floros. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Christina. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you. You know, I love chatting with you.
I honestly, everyone get ready. This is going to be a 4-hour episode. No, not really. We're just going to talk for 2 hours before and then an hour and a half after. But Jenny, you and I have known each other since 2011. I have had the honor of working with you, for you, alongside you, and just watching you pave the way and develop this incredible career, not only on paper, but I can't find a single person who has had any interaction with you ever that doesn't say that you are one of the most impactful and incredible people in their personal and professional lives. And I am included in that bucket. So tell us a little bit of your story, how you got where you are. Tell us the tale.
Oh my goodness, Christina, thank you for that beautiful and humbling introduction very much. What a journey it has been. So, you know, I consider my career in three chapters. So chapter one was live entertainment ticketing. I worked for venues, promoters, Ticketmaster for 10 and a half years and absolutely loved that industry. And it was really the foundation for my growth to kind of determine, you know, what kind of professional did I want to be? Where were my strengths? Where did my superpowers come from? Like, that was really a really telling time. And then that took me to chapter two, which was tech. So I worked for a startup company, a cost-based marketing program for a couple years. And then that led me to Groupon for 11 years, which was an incredible, I say I got my MBA at because
we all did.
Growth, change, you know, led a business unit of 300 inside outside salespeople, you know, 150, you know, account management and customer success people. I mean, just the opportunity and the platform to really build and develop leaders and really help navigate the careers of so many incredible people like yourself and to see the success that so many former Grouponers were everywhere, right? And they're everywhere. And to know that I had a little bit to do, just a little bit to do with some of those careers is my legacy and my biggest accomplishment. So then, okay, so that chapter ends and I'm currently in chapter three. And chapter three is all about taking what I love most about my career and carving it out and building a business called Advanced Ward Consulting, where I focus on leadership development for mid-level management. And how I define mid-level management is managers, whether they're seasoned or aspiring managers, to directors, to RVPs, to VPs. That level that just unfortunately takes a little bit of a backseat to development.
Just a touch.
It's been... It's been an amazing chapter that I'm in the middle of, and just being able to see the impact and the influence that I can continue to have so that I can help enhance leadership skills in individuals that can pass that on and continue to build successful leaders. And we just keep it moving. So, yeah. So that's where I'm at today.
Oh, I mean, we're going to have a lot of fun talking about this. And by fun, like a painful fun, because I think we're going to talk about some of the issues that persist for that middle to higher level of management and kind of how to solve them. Before we dive into that, what makes you so good at what you do now is you have an uncanny ability to see where people are really, really strong, where they have some gaps, but build a relationship with them quickly, built on trust. You do what you say that you're going to do. And so to dig in first, how have you been able to go about your entire career by building that level of trust, which is allowing you to be so successful now as this leadership coach? People have to trust you. They have to believe in you. How have you approached building relationships in your career?
Authentically. Because people will see it. You know, if you try to be someone you're not, or if you're trying to mirror someone that you don't have that inherent DNA, people see it, right? I think what's critical is I truly believe and connect with people because I authentically and passionately want to help them. I believe that you should bring people along. I believe that, you know, it's important. We can all say, for example, a perfect analogy, right? I do not have the word weakness in my vocabulary. And all of my clients, I tell them, remove, absolutely remove that word from your vocabulary. You have strengths and you have opportunities. And the goal is to turn those opportunities into strengths. And that's where development comes in, right? The problem with that word weakness is it invokes a negative energy when used. And unfortunately, people also weaponize that, right? What's your weakness? What's your weakness? And then all of a sudden that comes back into the fold of a conversation. And you're like, well, wait a minute.
Especially in an interview. Tell me your weakness. You're like, I don't want to.
You know,
it's not relevant.
that analogy, I think, really defines what I'm about. I'm not about trying to find what is wrong with people. I'm trying to really build them up by helping them develop the skills to be greater at what they do. And so, you know, I think it, you know, it stems from a little bit of the DNA. You know, I have to give the credit to my parents. My parents were, you know, I'm first generation here. You know, my parents are immigrants from Greece, and they, yes, opened a restaurant, a diner, you know, let's just
love it.
And my parents built an incredible following and had a business for over 20 years. And people from all walks of life in the neighborhood came to Sip and Straw the Diner because my father made everyone feel like family, right? He remembered their orders. He literally, without knowing it, without being educated, he built a brand, he built a customer base, and he built retention. Okay, so I think watching that and living that was, I think, my foundation for what my career was going to be, without even knowing it.
It's beautiful. Learning from watching incredible people. And again, like what we do in this industry, we see it everywhere. It's not specific to it. It's human behaviors that either lead to success or lead to a lack of success, or maybe, as you would put it, more opportunities. Some people have more opportunities to improve than others. And so as you're thinking about how to apply these, I want to focus the conversation into one specific area right now, simply because, at least for me, and granted, it has to do with what I do as well, but right now I'm seeing a lot of pain between VPs of sales, SVPs of sales, VPs of revenue, specifically, and either their CEO or their CEO and founder. And it feels like there's always been this trend of, I mean, I'd be willing to bet that anybody listening to this, if your VP of sales reports to your CEO and that CEO also happens to be a founder, a co-founder, they're likely knocking heads right now, right? They're likely knocking heads, bumping into each other. And I'm seeing this a lot in the conversations I'm having privately. There is this inherent tension that exists between these two roles. And in an upmarket, we can ignore that for a while and brush it under the table. But in a down market, like we have been in, the contention there and the visceral behavior and the number of VPs of sales whose heads are rolling right now, and it's a hire and a fire and a hire and a fire. What do you make of this tension that exists between these two roles very, very specifically? In your mind, is this normal? Do you see this a lot too?
Unfortunately, it's a little too normal. Right? I've seen it both ways. So what I mean by that is I have seen, you know, C-level execs who say, I'm hiring people to surround me to get different points of view. And I may not always agree with your point of view, but I'm going to give you the platform to discuss it with me. And I'm going to give you the opportunity to help me see it from a different point of view, from a different perspective. But the buck stops with that C-level exec, right? They then have to make a decision. And the best CEOs that I have worked for or that I have seen take that information and they make the tough decisions, right? And sometimes it goes against what they originally thought because they trusted, they hired people for a reason, for their area of expertise, for their wisdom, for their, you know, their knowledge base. Those I have seen, they are the most successful, right? So you can have some debates. Debates are healthy.
We like debate.
Consciously are saying, yes, I want that. That's the model, right? That is success for me. The ones that are challenging, some of the ones that you're talking about, I've also seen, which are the C-level execs, with all due respect, are saying they want, you know, to have the experience surrounding them and they want to hear different points of view, but it's because they're saying it because they know they have to say it, but they're not being honest with themselves because they really don't want that bit of information and they're not respecting the experience and knowledge base of who they've hired, right? And I think they do, but when the time comes to have that discussion, they really just want lieutenants who execute, right? And so that's where the challenge comes in. So I encourage all, you know, C-level execs or lead VPs with directors at all levels, right? If you're a hiring manager of people, ask yourself the tough question and be honest. Do you want lieutenants who just execute with absolutely no voice and no opinion in the matter? And you're free to have that approach, right? And build a company and a team based on that. Or ask yourself the tough question saying, no, it's worth the debate. It's worth the challenge to build around me and the team because we're going to get further with different points of view and be honest. That doesn't mean you're going to take every piece of advice, right? As the bug stops with the C-level exec, but be honest about what it is you're building because for yourself and for the individual, don't waste talent. Don't waste talent. You know, be honest with what it is that you want to build the company and to reach the goals that you need to reach. So I that's been my perspective on it. I think those are the challenges. And I think people just have to ask the tough questions. You know, do you really want my point of view? And is it going to make a difference?
That's right.
That's really the truth for me.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But I think a lot of folks would mirror that. I certainly have seen sort of those two sides of the pillar. And it's difficult. It's difficult when it's a stressful economy. It's difficult when it's a tough market. It's difficult when you have a board breathing down your back. It's difficult when everyone is worried about their jobs. You want to exist in an environment where you can truly trust people to do what they know how to do. But to your point, that idea that the pressure to perform sometimes is so immense. And so that step back in a good time to say, I'm hiring an executive team. I'm hiring a leadership team. And I have to acknowledge and I have to have the comfort and the confidence enough to know what I know how to do really, really well and execute there while still being open to differing opinions. But then also the ability to say, I don't know that. And I have found that for me early in my leadership career, if my very first leadership role had been a CEO co-founder, I would have been a really bad one because I hadn't earned the low enough ego and the humbleness to be able to realize that saying, I actually don't know how to do that. And I need to trust you and your expertise is strength as a leader to be able to delegate like that. I didn't know that. Or that took me some time, some battle scars to really uncover and say, wow, strength isn't in being a leader that says, I know how to do everything. I'm the best and the smartest in the room. It's hiring people who are smarter than you and know how to do the thing and knowing when to let them run and knowing when to say, you know what? Actually, I think I got this. I still want to here, because at the end of the day, I want the right result. It's not about me being right or you being right. And that takes some time. And so if you're approaching this from a coaching standpoint, and you know what, maybe this isn't even specific to VPs of sales. I think every level of leadership, there's that area of I'm a leader. I have to know how to do it all. And it has to be my idea. And if, heaven forbid, if I give somebody on my team the credit for doing something amazing, does that threaten my job? Does that threaten my position? There's so many nuances that exist kind of in the dark depths of qualitative leadership. And so as you're approaching looking at, we'll call it a go-to-market leadership team, knowing that these tensions exist, how do you advise companies to break through that and really live in what it sounds like you're talking about, which is a very radically candid environment that embraces people saying, I don't know. How do you build that?
Divide and conquer. That is what should be the foundation and the framework for any leader who's hiring people and who's responsible for a team of individuals, right? To your point, Christina, we're not experts in everything. I always tell people, what, again, this goes into the superpowers, right? What are your top three strengths, right? What are you known for? Lean into that, and then build your team with the other qualities around you and have the confidence in your ability and your ability to surround yourself. For example, as an RVP of Groupon for many years, you know, I was known as the people leader. I was the one who was hiring and retaining individuals. Regardless of the C-level execs throughout the years, the number one question always was, how are you retaining your talent? Why do people not want to leave your business unit? It's always the number one question.
No one wanted to leave. It's true. It was like everybody wants to work for Jenny for the rest of their lives.
And it's because I knew and was very confident in what my abilities were and what they weren't, okay? And so my RSDs, my managers that I hired were, you know, I hired them for the strengths that they brought to the team that others didn't have. So what that did is it brought that knowledge into the base, right, into the unit, and it allowed people to have their flowers, right, to have the platform to say, like, that's the go-to person. That's who you go to for analytics. That's who you go to for operations. That's who you go to. And everyone then really can begin to showcase their strengths. But it takes a leader to be confident in their own abilities. And it takes a leader to determine what is your purpose, right? Because to me, that's the difference between a manager and a leader, right? A leader builds skill sets around them and brings people along. A manager is tactical, right? They take a situation and they go after it. Both are needed. Both are needed. However, some people are both. And some people are aspiring to be leaders, right? So I really do think you have, just like we always talk about when you're talking to a client, right? The most important component in a conversation with a client is discovery. You got to discover, right? You got to discover before you start pushing your agenda. You got to discover before you can identify what the solution is. Discovery should be the baseline of everything you do. You know, discover in yourself where your skills are. Discover what it is that you're looking to accomplish. Ask yourself those discovery questions and then begin to build. So dividing and conquering, you know, is really, I believe, a very important component to building a successful team.
Yeah. And feedback along with that is really, really difficult when you have, you know, when we're, you know, honing in on this situation, because I think it rings so true for so many people in leadership seats right now, where they basically have to say to their boss, you are wrong. And what you want to do is wrong. And now that's also an opinion-based statement, but we are relying on folks for their expertise. And that's a difficult thing to do. And not everybody does that very well. Again, early in my career, heck, sometimes these days, right? Being able to look at somebody who is in a higher seat than you that has the ability to impact your career or impact your livelihood or impact your job, and looking at that person and saying, what you're trying to do is wrong and here's why, is unbelievably difficult because of everything mentioned. So how do you approach a conversation like that when you're realizing you're bumping up against your boss? Your boss says, I want you to march right. And you say, I've marched right before. We got to go left. How do you have that conversation without it turning contentious or without heads rolling?
Yeah, a couple ways, right? I would say, you know, I like the word consider. You know, like consider, you know, I'd like you to consider this point of view. I did some research and I'm bringing some information for your consideration, right? No one wants to be told they're wrong. No one wants, you know what I mean? It's one of those words again, you know, weakness.
You're wrong.
Right? Well, and I know this was just a, you know, a conversation, but like when you're a believer in something, you know, you're going to start. Choice of words when communicating can help navigate the conversation, right? So being able to find the connection between you and the individual that you're talking to, common ground, use that as your baseline. Find the common ground and then build the conversation from there, right? Because if you haven't established the connection of the baseline for the conversation, everybody's in defense mode, right? So you've got to find the connector and then provide, right, the data, provide the experience. You know, recently someone said, you know, what's your opinion on, you know, data versus instinct versus gut, you know?
Ugh.
And listen, if you have earned your stripes and you have experience, and you have experience in a particular situation, I think it would be horrible if that wasn't taken into consideration from a decision maker, right? But gut and instinct alone is not okay. Like, there needs to be, you know, everyone needs to make informed decisions about different things in their life. The criteria to making an informed decision is data, is experience. And that experience has developed a gut that absolutely should be taken in consideration. Period, end of story. And I say that from someone who's got 30 years in the game here. You know, I've got a gut instinct. I have some experience in some of the situations. So absolutely I'm going to use that in making an informed decision. But the data is also critical, right? So I think to answer your question as far as like, how do you get someone to see it from a different point of view? You start with finding the connection. What is the common ground? And establish that, right? Establish that with the individual that you're talking to, and then you build from there. And everyone needs to feel comfortable and call it out. Like, it's okay to debate. You could debate. You know, I used to tell people all the time, listen, prove your point to me. Help me understand your point of view. but the butt's going to stop with me and I'm going to own that decision, right or wrong, right? Yeah. But I would be foolish if I didn't take the people that I built around me with their expertise, if I didn't take that information seriously to make an informed decision, right? So you got to trust in that. And it starts with the person, you know, finding that right able communication. It's all about communication. And sometimes it's an easy word, but it's a hard thing to really be able to, you know, and I've had my share of fights and I've had my share of debates and I've lost some and I've won some. And that's okay. You learn from that. But yeah, my advice is find the connection and provide considerations, the pros and cons, and be very honest about the consequences.
And that could too, what's interesting about that, and I'm going to go one level deeper to something that I think is even more in the gray area and the difficult area, is find the common ground, I think is beautiful advice. And to me, what that could sound like is, you know, let's give an example in sales, right? An example in sales could be you and your boss, your manager, your founder, your whoever are trying to figure out how to solve for a lack of pipeline, right? Everybody's dealing with that right now, right? Nobody listening to this has any pipeline. You have no pipeline, right? Great. No pipeline. Okay. So if you're arguing about the reason for no pipeline or how to solve for no pipeline or what you should do from a demand gen standpoint or a BDR standpoint or an AE outbound standpoint, what tool you should buy, meeting on the common ground doesn't mean we're going to argue back and forth about whose idea is right. It's what we are both trying to solve for is increasing the pipeline efficiently and in a way that is going to grow and evolve with the organization. We are solving the problem today for tomorrow. Do we agree on that? Do we agree that both of us want that? Yes. Okay. I have heard how you believe we should get there. And I've not only heard that, I've respected it. To use your word, I have another point of view to consider. And here's where it comes from. Now, here's where this can be a force for evil. And I want you to help us through it, right? Sometimes what people do, and everybody, when they are trying to prove their point and they're not getting through and they want to win or they don't know how to communicate, they start to throw their resume and their experience in the other person's face, right? Now, what that sounded like to me directly, I had somebody say this to me directly when I was trying to solve for pipeline in a prior organization, right? And we're going back and forth trying to figure it out. And we're both making great points. We're both being respectful. And this individual said to me, well, you know what, Christina, we're talking about an issue in enterprise and most of your experience is an SMB. So you don't know what you're talking about in enterprise. So my idea is the right idea, right? Or I've had folks say, look, I've been in this business. I've been in this industry for longer than you have. So my opinion is more important because of that experience, right? And that, without maybe doing it deliberately, is meant to shut the other person down. They're saying, you don't know what you're talking about. I'm looking at your resume and you don't have the experience to make this decision in my mind. So this is how I shut you down. And that can happen there. If you are the one communicating like that, or if you are the one on the receiving end of the communication, how do you move past that and not just shut down and say, okay, fine, you win?
Yeah. Sometimes you have to stand down.
Yeah.
And you, again, you have to be okay with it. We all have bosses. Everybody. Yeah. The CEO has the board.
That's right.
We all have someone that we are accountable to. Okay. And if it gets to a point where, whether it's contentious or whether it's very obvious that a decision has been made and it's not in your favor, you have to be able to also know when to stand down.
Know when they've made up their mind. Know when they're asking you for your opinion, but they don't actually want it. And now we have to move forward.
And you say, listen, you know, we've gone back and forth on this. I respect your position here. I've offered you all I can up to this point. Whatever you can take into consideration, that's great. And you know, you got to be okay with ending that conversation because it's not about the win.
That's right.
Okay. It's not about the win. It's about being able to offer enough information to your boss for your boss to make the right decision that they believe is the right decision. And same, individuals reporting into us, right? Their job is to provide us with as much information. But at the end of the day, everyone's, Christina, everyone at every level sees things from their own personal lens. A manager is going to look at things from their lens. A director is going to look at things from their lens. A VP is going to look at them situations. Everyone's got a little bit more insight to the bigger situation, okay? And you have to be okay with, there just could be some information you don't have the full picture on, and you're not supposed to. You know what I mean? There's just levels that, you know, you kind of shield people from certain information as well, right? Because they have other priorities. But at some point, at the end of the day, there's got to be professional respect that you have to know you've taken it as far as you can go. It's not about the win. It's about feeling good. Like, for that, in that example, I think it's an excellent one, because typically what will happen, and we've all been there. I raise my hand, I've been there, right? I walk away from that conversation feeling defeated, horrible. I've contributed nothing. I'm not great at my job, et cetera, right? Or you walk away going, I know what I'm saying is real. I know that it can make a difference. Instead of walking away feeling defeated, I would encourage people, if they felt they put forth the both, you know, the best possible argument with the best point of view, walk away feeling proud of that. Walk away feeling empowered by that. Whether the individual that you're working with is taking that information and doing something with it or not, feel empowered that, first of all, you have the platform and the voice to share it. And maybe this time it wasn't incorporated, but next time it could. Right? It's just, you got to just know when to stand down and then allow that. Instead of feeling defeated, feel empowered that you even have the platform to share it.
Yeah. The emotional maturity to realize, okay, I'm going to either go along to get along, or I'm going to disagree and commit, because at the end of the day, we have to do that. And I think the way that you approached that was unbelievably beautiful, like the way that you approach so many things. And it actually brings us, surprisingly, that time flew by to...
Always does.
It always... See, we knew. We said it's going to be a four-hour episode. Let's make it five. It could. It easily could. But we are to our rapid reveal section. If you are on board with that, you have... We have three questions for you. You have 60 seconds or less to answer each. Let's dive in. All right. Number one, what is the best advice that you've ever been given?
Personal board of directors. Anytime you are at a crossroads with your career, with your life, make sure you have your tribe, your individuals who can give you different points of view, not what you want to hear, but what you need to hear to make an informed decision.
Amazing. So good. Number two, what's an irrational fear of yours?
Retirement.
Oh,
being in a position and having this 30-year career and having influence and impact and my own personal KPIs of how I've impacted someone each and every day at whatever level, being in a place in life where that no longer is my platform, that I'm not doing that I'm not in the thick of it helping people be their best self and helping them navigate their careers. That's a fear of mine. I'm like, what would I do? I don't know what I would do if I didn't have that. That's such an identity for me. So having to like determine what that looks like later in life is going to be a challenge.
Well, good news for you and all of us. You're building a legacy, which does not have a timeline nor an end date. So I just have a sneaking suspicion that the way that you impact lives might look different, but you're always going to do it. So typically I don't try to relieve the fears on this show. I just take them in and then I will secretly text you and lean into your fear. But this time I'm not going to do that here. I'm not going to do that here. Instead, it's the way that I see it, I don't know that you're ever going to retire from changing people's lives. You're really building a legacy. It goes so far beyond jobs.
Thank you. I'm going to hold on to that, Christina.
Hold on to that. Replay this part when you're like, it's coming, and be like, no, Christina said it's never coming. And then I said it is. It is the way. Number three, what is the last thing, this episode notwithstanding, what is the last thing that you taught someone?
The 70-30 rule is what I call it. On average, you should create your own metric, but on average, if I'm happy with what I'm delivering and what I'm doing in my career 70% of the time, then I'm good. And knowing, okay, that 30% of the things that I don't like to do or that I don't want to do is a component of my career, I know it's going to happen. That's fine, right? Because I've already established and set the benchmark for myself that 30% of the time, no matter where my career is or what I'm focused on, I may not like that, right? I may not be aligned with certain strategies, but I got to be the lieutenant and I got to make that happen, right? So I always tell people, do not put yourself in a position where you're expecting a company to deliver 100% of your happiness. It will be the biggest failure of your life. You are responsible for your happiness, not an organization, not a company. And whether it's 80-20, 70-30, 60-40, whatever that benchmark is for you, establish it and live by it, because you will have a much better journey and joy and experience with any organization. And when the time comes where it starts to flip, on average, not by day, because you're going to have good and bad days, but on average, then you have a decision to make, and it's yours to make. Everyone has the right to feel good and love the job that they do. For me, 70% of the time, not 100% of the time.
Amazing, as always. And I can imagine, like, I'm always wanting more of your time. Individuals listening to this are not only going to want to talk to you, meet you, but also they should bring you in to impact their leaders. That's what you do. And there's nobody better at it than you are. So where can folks find you, connect with you, learn more about what you're doing and what you're building?
Obviously, I'm very active on LinkedIn. Also, advanceforwardconsulting.com is my website. You can learn so much more about the services, the leadership services that I offer. You know, Jenny@advanceforwardconsulting.com is my email. So please, you know, reach out. Let's have a 10-15 minute conversation. However I can help an individual or organizations with intentional skill development of their mid-level management, let me know. I am happy to help.
Woo! As far as the ROI on that 10 to 15 minutes, the limit does not exist. I promise. Reach out to Jenny. She will change your life. She will change your organization one leader at a time. Jenny, thank you for coming on Taking the Lead. You've been wonderful.
Christina, it is always a joy. And like you said, we could do a four-part series on our conversations, but I am so incredibly proud of you. And I would be remiss not to end the conversation with how amazing your journey has been, and to see you evolve into the professional and the boss woman you are today, and creating platforms to bring women and empower women along. I couldn't be more proud of you. And I thank you for investing your time and your platform to share and bring focus and awareness to so many important topics. And more importantly, even the controversial ones are you don't shy away from that. And I thank you for that.
Oh, well, while I go get a Kleenex to get past the beautiful emotion of that, thank you all for listening. Thank you for the beautiful words. And that's all, folks.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Taking the Lead. If you're looking for more inspiring stories from women leaders in B2B tech, then visit us at motionagency.io/takingthelead.